Welcome to the podcast where we delve into the darkest corners of the Midlands, uncovering chilling tales of crime. From the bustling streets of Birmingham to the serene landscapes of Derbyshire, we're on a mission to unravel the mysteries behind these shocking murder cases. So if you're ready to explore the who, what and why behind these jaw-dropping cases, then stick around. This is Midlands Murder Files. The following story contains details of fatal violence towards a highly vulnerable victim, which may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Following last week's episode that wraps up in Tamworth, our journey now takes us on a 35-mile trip to the East Midlands and the vibrant city of Leicester. Leicester is the birthplace of many household names, including the irresistibly delicious Walker's Crisps, the English rock band Kasabian, the lovably flawed character Adrian Mole, and one of England's greatest centre-forwards, Gary Lineker. The city is also celebrated for its multiculturalism, famously hosting the largest Diwali celebrations outside of India, and is also home to the prestigious National Space Centre. July 2016 saw Sagala's Give Me Your Love topping the charts, while The Secret Life of Pets was the box office smash hit. However, England's football team suffered a devastating loss to Iceland in Euro 2016, marking one of their most humiliating defeats in history, if only they had Gary Lineker. Despite facing numerous challenges, 23-year-old Brendan Mason embrace life with joy. He was particularly uplifted by his beloved Leicester City's astonishing triumph in clinching the English Premier League title just a few months prior. Brendan resided in assisted accommodation in Leicester's Glenfield area due to his poor vision and learning difficulties. Nevertheless, he consistently maintained a positive outlook on life. He possessed a delightful sense of humour and found joy in making his friends and family members laugh with his witty jokes. However, Brendan's condition made him highly vulnerable, and he was described as easily led. On the evening of Monday, the 4th of July, 2016, Brendan visited a friend in hospital at the Leicester Royal Infirmary. His friend asked him to collect something from the nearby Elizabeth House facility where she had been staying. But despite his efforts, Brendan couldn't gain entry to the property. After this unsuccessful attempt, Brendan called a supervisor from his assisted accommodation just after midnight, seeking assistance for a taxi fare home and explaining that he was just waiting for someone to let him into his friend's flat at Elizabeth House and he would be back soon. However, Brendan never made it back home. At 1:22 a.m. on Tuesday the 5th of July, Brendan received a call from his friend, 21-year-old Joshua Hack, who invited him to a gathering at the nearby Abbey Park. Despite the late hour, Brendan agreed, and CCTV later spotted him walking through Granby Street in the city centre while talking to Hack on the phone. He was dressed in grey canvas tracksuit bottoms and a navy blue Adidas tracksuit top, and he was carrying a black Puma backpack. By 1:37 a.m, Brendan, Hack and another friend, Keith Lowe, also 21, were captured on CCTV. Hack and Lowe were on bicycles while Brendan walked alongside them. They then entered Abbey Park together, disappearing from view. However, unbeknownst to Brendan, his friends had orchestrated an ambush rather than a casual hangout. A few weeks earlier, Brendan had attended a party with his friends, including Hack and Lowe. During the gathering, Brendan found himself chatting with a 15-year-old girl, and their conversation led to laughter at one of Brendan's jokes. Unbeknownst to Brendan, the girl was actually Lowe's girlfriend. Triggering feelings of jealousy and insecurity in Lowe due to Brendan's outgoing nature. Shortly after, an incident occurred where Brendan accidentally brushed against the girl while attempting to avoid spilling his drink. Though entirely unintentional, Hack and Lowe perceived the incident as suspicious. They started accusing Brendan of inappropriate behaviour. Shockingly, the girl, swayed by Hack and Lowe's allegations, sided with them. In the days that followed, Brendan and Hack encountered each other at the Foss Shopping Park in Leicester. The pair started having an argument, which was provoked by Hack, but the situation didn't escalate further. However, after Brendan had gone home, Hack started spreading the word that he hated Brendan's guts and branded him a paedophile. Brendan remained oblivious to the impending danger. Trusting Hack and Lowe as his friends, he had no inkling that they had spent the previous 24 hours planning a savage attack in the middle of the night that would surpass anyone's darkest expectations. Shortly after their arrival at the park, the two assailants unleashed a vicious onslaught on Brendan. They mercilessly kicked and punched Brendan before stamping and jumping on him. Then, they hung Brendan from a tree, taking turns assaulting him while the other held him, all while mocking and laughing at the defenseless young man. If the violence wasn't bad enough, the perpetrators were communicating with each other via private Facebook messaging. This was done to ensure that Brendan remained unaware of the extent of the torment they had planned for him. They also chose to record the heinous acts on their mobile phones. The upcoming part of the story contains profanity and incredibly distressing content. If you prefer not to hear the descriptions of the videos, please skip forward by 2 minutes. At 2:46 a.m, Hack sent a message to Lowe saying, "Just do it, dude," and followed it up with another message that read, "Just hit him and we can both fuck off when he's KO'd. Lowe replied to Hack, "Shall we do it? Because he's fucking me off with the lies." Then, in the first video recorded by Hack, Lowe can be seen gripping Brendan's neck between his legs. Lowe is heard saying, "Shut your fucking mouth now." Brendan replies, "I'm choking." This was followed by Hack saying, "Here you go, smile for the camera," as the mobile phone is held near Brendan's face. Hack then tells Lowe, "Shut him up before I shut him up." He then lands another blow on Brendan. Hack adds, "Oh, nice cut on your eye." In a second video lasting 53 seconds, depicting what was described as the second wave of the attack, Brendan appeared to have been stripped naked. The footage seemed intended for Lowe's girlfriend, as Brendan's cries of distress could be heard repeatedly. In that video, Lowe says, "Here's Brendan, look at him. Told you whatever he'd done to you, I'd do worse to him. Told you that." He then turns to Brendan, who is seen trying to defend himself, and shouts, "Move your hand away from your face. Move your hand away from your face now." Brendan is then seen being kicked multiple times by Lowe. The fact that the two videos were recorded 35 minutes apart underscores the sustained brutality inflicted upon Brendan. In fact, this torment lasted for several agonizing hours. As a consequence of the vicious assault, Brendan sustained a staggering 99 separate injuries. These included severe brain damage, fractures to his larynx, hyoid bone, and 5 ribs. extensive bruising, collapsed lungs, two black eyes, and multiple abrasions. Following the relentless beating, the perpetrators forcibly pushed Brendan into a nearby pond, lightly in an attempt to eradicate any potential forensic evidence. After dragging Brendan out of the pond, Lowe callously posed for a trophy photo behind the naked and battered Brendan. Subsequently, Lowe and Hack abandoned Brendan in the park, taking all of his belongings and clothing with them. At 4:20 a.m, Hack and Lowe discarded Brendan's backpack into the River Soar. The backpack contained all of Brendan's clothing and most of his belongings, with the exception of his mobile phone. They then cycled to a nearby McDonald's, where Lowe's sister was employed. Nonchalantly captured on CCTV, they leisurely strolled into the fast food outlet and boasted to Lowe's sister about their vicious assault on someone in the park. Groundsmen arriving at 7:40 a.m. that morning discovered Brendan in the park, slumped against a tree, naked, unconscious, and bleeding profusely. He lacked any means of identification, as his phone and wallet had been taken. Emergency first aid workers promptly arrived and airlifted Brendan via helicopter to Walsgrave Hospital in Coventry. Tragically, despite everyone's best efforts to save him, Brendan succumbed to his unsurvivable head injuries later that day. Around 10 a.m. that morning, Hack and Lowe encountered a friend while walking down Belgrave Gate near Leicester City Centre. This friend, en route to place a bet, was greeted by Lowe with a chilling statement: "We've just kicked someone's head in on Abbey Park." The duo appeared pleased with themselves, with Lowe even carrying a shoebox. Opening the lid, he proudly displayed a pair of worn Adidas trainers, pointing out dried blood still present on them. Lowe claimed they had attacked a paedophile who had attempted to touch up his girlfriend. Initially dismissing the conversation as youthful bravado, the friend didn't think too much of it. However, after learning about Brendan's death later that week, he spoke with his mother about the encounter with Lowe and Hack. Following their discussion, he decided to contact the police. Later that day, Lowe would attempt to sabotage more evidence linking him to the incident. He bleached his blood-stained trousers, washed his hooded top, and dumped his blood-splattered shoes in a black bag, which he would later leave at a friend's flat in a bid to cover his tracks. The following day, as news of Brendan's body being found began to spread throughout the community, a group of his friends decided to visit Abbey Park to lay flowers at the scene and pay their respects. However, among the group of mourners, there was an unexpected presence: Joshua Hack. It was later revealed that Hack had orchestrated the trip and guided others to the scene. The additional members of the group comprised of Lowe's girlfriend, along with a 15-year-old girl, whom I will refer to as Girl A. She knew Brendan and Hack, but not Lowe, and a 16-year-old girl that I will refer to as Girl B, who was acquainted with all three. As they departed from the park, Girl A was taken aback to hear Lowe's girlfriend assert that Brendan deserved what had occurred, indicating she was still adhering to the narrative of his alleged inappropriate behaviour. The group then proceeded to a friend's flat, where Lowe joined them. Unable to restrain themselves in front of others, Lowe and Hack boasted about their encounter with Brendan in the park, describing the beating they inflicted on him, as well as stripping him and submerging him in the water to wash off the fingerprints. When asked how he planned to cover up his involvement, Hack replied, "We'll just blame it on gypsies." It was during this gathering that Girl A observed Lowe's girlfriend was now in possession of Brendan's phone. Although she had only known Brendan briefly, Girl B also felt uneasy during the meeting. Brendan had always been kind to her, and she considered him a good friend. He often ensured her safety, especially when trouble arose in the company of Hack, by walking her and her friends home. Girl B had also been present during the incident between Brendan and Lowe's girlfriend, and she was aware of the allegations, but also knew Lowe, Hack, and the girl were over-exaggerating what had happened. Both girls independently contacted the police to report Hack and Lowe's admissions, but they were unaware that they were already closing in on the duo. Despite Brendan's phone being missing, the police managed to obtain his call records from his network provider. Among these records was the 18-minute call between Brendan and Hack, just before Brendan was captured on CCTV entering the park with Hack and Lowe. Significantly, Brendan's phone did not make any further calls or send any text messages after this time. As both men were already known to the police, they were among the first to be arrested. Hack was the first to be brought in. Initially, he attempted to deceive the police during his initial interview, claiming he had merely walked into the park with Brendan before parting ways. However, during the interview, Hack's phone repeatedly received notifications. These included multiple missed calls and a text message instructing him not to divulge any information. All of these were from Keith Lowe. During Lowe's interview, he remained evasive and non-committal. When the police requested that he unlock his phone for further analysis, he adamantly refused to provide them with the passcode. However, the police had already gathered substantial evidence from their initial analysis of Hack's phone, combined with the CCTV footage. This provided enough information to charge the duo with Brendan's murder. On Friday the 8th of July, Hack and Lowe appeared before Leicester Magistrates Court, where they were charged and remanded in custody. The following day, their trial was set for February 2017. In the months that follow, the police and the prosecution worked meticulously to collate evidence against the pair from the CCTV footage, message exchanges, and video footage of the pair beating up Brendan, which was found on Hack's phone. On Friday the 10th of February 2017, the duo appeared before Leicester Crown Court to enter their pleas ahead of the trial. Lowe pleaded not guilty, but to the prosecution's surprise, Hack pleaded guilty. It became evident that the evidence, particularly the video from Hack's phone, led his representatives to believe they had little ground to argue their case. Consequently, Lowe would now stand trial alone, with proceedings commencing on Monday the 13th of February. It appeared that Lowe's defence strategy had shifted towards attributing blame solely to Hack due to his confession. During the initial 3 days of the trial, witnesses, including the aforementioned friend of the duo, Girl A and Girl B, provided testimony against both men. However, despite his boasting, there was still a lack of concrete evidence implicating Lowe in Brendan's murder. However, on day four of the trial, new evidence emerged. Despite Lowe's initial refusal to grant police access to his phone, the National Technical Assistance Centre in London managed to hack into it. They discovered Lowe's Google password stored on his phone, which allowed access to his cloud account. Within this account, they uncovered the second video recorded by the duo, revealing Lowe delivering several blows to an already injured Brendan. With the emergence of this new evidence, Lowe found himself with little choice but to change his plea to guilty. Consequently, the trial was halted on Thursday the 16th of February and sentencing occurred the following Tuesday. During the sentencing hearing, Judge Chambers informed the defence barristers that Brendan's murder would be treated as a case of joint enterprise, with a starting point of a minimum jail term of 15 years. However, he outlined four aggravating factors that escalated the severity of the crime and therefore the sentence. These were the significant premeditation by both defendants, Brendan's vulnerability as an adult, the extreme physical suffering inflicted prior to his death, and the recording of the attack for their own gratification. Hack's barrister argued that his client, who suffers from autism and has an IQ of 69, displayed pathetically immature behaviour. He requested leniency, citing Hack's intellectual limitations and the courage it took to enter a guilty plea. Lowe's barrister highlighted Lowe's troubled upbringing, including being placed in foster care at a young age and losing his foster carer at 16, as well as his diagnosis of dyslexia, ADHD, and low intellectual functioning. He appealed to the judge to consider Lowe's age and provide some hope for the future. The judge agreed to slightly reduce the sentences for both defendants due to their guilty pleas. Hack received a 7% reduction for his early plea, while Lowe received a 4% reduction for his plea during the trial, which had already caused distress to vulnerable witnesses. In his closing remarks, Judge Chambers delivered a stern summary of the case. Brendan Mason was only 23 with his life before him. He was sadly a vulnerable young man with learning difficulties. This was a planned attack during which you filmed each other assaulting him, and you had revelled in what you had done by bragging to others. You stripped him naked and left him unconscious. He died later that day. You clearly knew the difference between right and wrong. You were in full possession of your faculties. Judge Chambers then gave Joshua Hack a life sentence with a minimum term of 20 years and 6 months, and Keith Lowe a life sentence with a minimum term of 21 years. Following the verdict, Brendan's uncle, Robert Chambers, released a statement and explained how the distress of Brendan's murder had led to him giving up work and had put an unwanted strain on his marriage. The statement said, "I remember the day that Brendan was murdered. Something was ripped out of me. He was the life and soul of our house. He used to crack jokes and make everyone laugh. This is something you hear about on TV and never expect to go through." Brendan's aunt, Sarah Chambers, also added, "It is not right how two evil people can do such a horrific thing and leave a massive hole in our lives that will never be filled again. Brendan was a lovely young man and he was so happy, even though he had numerous learning difficulties and was very easily led by others. He always knew right from wrong." Joshua Hack will not be considered for parole until the year 2037, and Keith Lowe won't be considered until a year later in 2038. I always aim to maintain objectivity when delving into cases, but this one truly tested my resolve. Over the past year, I've delved into numerous harrowing stories, but this one took me a full 2 weeks to piece together this script, as I was utterly horrified by the depths of the depravity I encountered. The suffering inflicted upon Brendan by these two despicable individuals is beyond comprehension, especially considering Brendan's vulnerability. He placed his trust in these individuals, considering them friends, only to be betrayed in the most heartless manner imaginable. And despite their attempts to posture, their cowardice was laid bare as they scrambled to avoid accountability at every turn. Much like the case of Wesley Street in the last episode, these men have squandered the prime years of their lives with no one to blame but themselves. Yet the tragic loss of another young life here in the process renders this story all the more devastating. In a way, there's no real justice to be found here. So what are your thoughts on this episode? I'm eager to hear your perspective. Please share your thoughts on this story by commenting on the episode thread on Instagram at Midlands Murder Files, or on Facebook by searching Midlands Murder Files. Also, if there's any cases you'd like me to explore in the future, please feel free to send me a direct message with the details. I've already received quite a few suggestions since releasing the opening episode, which I'm really grateful for. Thank you all for listening. See you soon. Thank you all for tuning in to this episode of Midland's Murder Files. If you enjoyed the show, I would really appreciate it if you could consider leaving us a 5-star review on your favourite podcast platform and following us on Instagram for further content. Join us for the next episode as we continue our journey through the mysteries of the Midlands. Thanks for being part of the story. Until next time.